Let's begin with our local veteran here in the studio, Fred Matthews. The national report that came out some time ago outlined concerns at VA facilities across the country. This is the first time, though, Fred, we've heard from someone inside the organization locally who's corroborating that the VA has a problem.
Well, there's no question. They do have a problem. And, again, by way of disclosure, I'm a patient at the VA clinic here and in Gainesville. I've also been at the clinic at Lake City many times. Again, the care I've received has been good. Most veterans will say the care has been good once you get in it, but the problem is getting into it. And many veterans, even myself, we've changed doctors about four times before I got to see the real one that I was supposed to see because they've either quit or been moved around. It's just frightening a bit. And when you look at what's being reported by the TU, about the caseload that they have, if you walked into the clinic or the hospitals, you'd think there's thousands of people to be served on a regular basis. But this guy indicates, and apparently it's being corroborated, they're talking about 10 patients a day as a minimum, when the average local private physician sees up to 30. I mean, this is incredible stuff. But again, you know, there may be some mitigating issues behind this having to do with age, which is what they mentioned. But this is a tough time for the VA, and there's no getting around it, and they've just got to tighten up their act. I mean, they're still using an antiquated computer system, for what I understand, to do this appointment business, and it's just shameful given what we are facing with veterans who've come home over the last 11 years.
Now, the scandal, of course, broke in the spring, Larry. 40 veterans died while they were waiting for care out in Phoenix. They were on a secret waiting list. Mm-hmm. Here in town, we're hearing from your colleague Cliff Davis, anonymous source, that the waiting lists in our area for our veteran population are just as long.
And it's really not surprising. I mean, we've been fighting two wars for the last 10 years. The thousands of soldiers killed, more thousands injured, and there's going to be that backlog because I don't think there's been any effort to expand the capacity of the VA in the last 10 years, and we suddenly have a lot of new veterans, a lot of people who've been through wars and are suffering from injuries, physical and mental, and I don't think we've seen a lot of effort to expand the services, and we're going to have to because we're going to be dealing with the veterans of these wars for generations.
And the number to join the show is 549-2937. John Burr, this local whistleblower, says that the caseloads are too light, the funding is an issue, but he also says it's a cultural issue.
this is really, it's a shame. But I hope what doesn't happen here is this becomes a partisan food fight with people, you know, kicking Obama and, you know, the Democrats kicking the Republicans back. Fred, you probably know more about this than I do, but I think, you know, this is a problem that's going on literally for decades to some degree or another. My father was a World War II veteran and he wanted nothing to do with the VA hospitals up in New York. So, this really just needs to get cleaned up now, once and for all, and put in a better system and move on.
AG.
Yeah, I just don't know if the resources are actually there to clean up the system. I'd like to hear from more doctors, actually, because this one guy's commentary, actually, it makes sense and it checks out with what the Republicans are saying. But, you know, I'd like to hear from other people who might be in the system also. I do think there's a resource allocation issue that comes back to what Fred was saying about the computer system and everything else. And, you know, that may be informing the culture itself, whereas, you know, these people feel like the doctors and the administration feel like they don't have the resources to do what they need to do. So it may breed its own lethargy also.
Now, one of the caveats we have to deal with is in terms of what he's talking about, light days and heavy days, is that, remember now, this is a finite population. Granted, there are a lot of veterans coming into the system, a lot of older veterans that are in the system, but it is fairly a finite system. Everybody can't do this, so everybody doesn't have access to this system. So there will be days in which you have heavier appointment days than you will have others because of the nature of how it rolls. I would tend to think that's something there, but the problem with the VA is that they have nobody to speak to this. They're literally taking a punch. They're just being beat to death, and there's nobody.
They really are, and
to defend them.
Yeah, they're really not trying to change the narrative, and I don't think they really can.
Yeah, I mean, Corinne Brown,
they're not in a position to speak out.
Corinne Brown has been surprisingly vocal about saying the VAs in this area are in very good shape. They're a model for the rest of the country. I don't know what she's going to say about the story that ran today, but you're right. In general, there's not a lot of people in VA every day who speak out on its behalf.
And there are a lot of veterans in our area, and a lot of you are listening right now. So give us a call with your thoughts as we discuss this. 549-2937. John in Riverside is on the line. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning. Luckily, I'm pretty healthy. I am on my fifth doctor in 3 years here in Jacksonville. But I noticed when I went to Gainesville, things there were atrocious. There were sometimes 100, 125 people waiting to do a claim for, you know, transportation to Gainesville. But the one thing that bothered me is I tried to get on the Obamacare with my family, and they wouldn't allow me because I had VA. And they told me I would be $463 a month while my wife was only $83 with a tax credit. So because I have VA available to me, I was penalized for it. And, you know, they took away my tax credit to get real medical.
Oh, sorry to hear that, John. Sorry to hear that. Thanks for calling in.
I've never heard about anything that with anyone else.
Okay. All right.
Well, that is a factor. VA is your medical care if you take it for that. You don't have to have any other insurance. If you have another insurance, and VA will take a copay off of that other insurance. But if you don't have any, you don't have to pay anything, and that's why it's there. And it says so in the quote Obamacare literature about, you know, the cares that you have. So that's not an unusual situation.
Hmm. We've got a call from Gainesville. It's Paul all the way in Gainesville this morning. Hey, Paul, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, Melissa, how are you?
Great, thanks.
I'm doing great. I just wanted to comment. I've been lost a leg, Vietnam veteran, getting great care at the VA. Have to speak up for them and commend them. I think the secret of the VA is proactivity. It's being proactive as a veteran, not waiting too long, not waiting until you have a seeping wound or an open sore that's been there for 7 months, to go to the VA and demand care and then expect that they'll jump, you know, and get everything taken care of. I sit with guys who have not been seen for 2 or 3 years and then are trying to get signed up now that they have cancer, now that they have something that's progressed into a really serious disease. God love them. But the VA, you know, if you start early and you need their care, I got news for you. They're the best.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, so it's important to be proactive. Thanks for that, Paul. That's Paul in Gainesville.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And the whole key with our medical system now is, for the most part, if you suddenly get sick, you can't get in anywhere that day. I mean, I caught a cold a few weeks ago, went to see a doctor, and I just couldn't get in for the next day or so. You know, it does help if you're seeing them regularly rather than just going to see them.
Waiting until there's a crisis.
You know, but the fact of the matter is, you know, most people don't go and see a regular doctor. They, you know, they do wait until
something's wrong.
Until something's wrong, and they should be able to get service when something's wrong. And you know, I'm not sure I really buy that argument.
Okay, and we've got a woman calling in from Nassau County. She doesn't want to give her name, though. Good morning, Nassau County.
Hi, good morning. I've called in before in regards to your staffing issues. My husband's a doctor, and I've been a nurse in the VA. My husband's been a doctor in the VA for about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And I just think that I've called in before when I was saying that the staffing is top heavy. I don't think that people realized what I was saying, that the number of physicians is so low at each clinic that the RNs and med techs themselves outweigh the physician ratio, that the staffing is from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. However, I watch my husband get up every morning and about 4:30 in the morning, leave the house and report to work by 6:30 in the morning, and we sit down and eat dinner between 8 and 9 p.m. when he gets home. And that can be validated by anyone who knows us in the community. I feel that when I brought up the issue before about the number of RNs versus med techs versus doctors, it was totally misunderstood. I have been an RN in the VA. It is a most enjoyable position, but it was also not very rewarding because I didn't get to see the volume that I normally see in the community side. There were way too many RNs doing what the doctors needed actually to address, and consequently the patients then waited.
I see.
This is very sad.
Okay, so they need more.
The thing about that I wanted to make a point is, if they actually watched the doctors on their electronic health record, the hours that the doctors are working versus they don't clock in. It's a salary position, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. However, my husband works almost exactly inversely proportional to that. If they saw the physicians charting on that electronic health record system addressing every single need that these veterans receive, and I am a veteran also, both my children are, and I am very proud to say that I've received VA care, my children have, and we've always gotten excellent care. But I feel that they are not addressing the doctor issue. There are not enough doctors. My husband does this.
All righty.
And I don't think that the salaries also addressed as a physician wage versus what they could make in the community.
All right. Thanks
but
for calling.
And we clock in.
Thanks for calling. Fred Matthews.
Well, I think she makes a number of valid points about it. But again, it speaks to what I indicated earlier and what we can see. This is a finite population with it has a number of people, patients that are in the system. They use a lot of nurse practitioners now, more so than they did before.
And she's saying there's too many nurses, not enough doctors.
Well, I mean, that's an argument that's an inside baseball argument, isn't it? Because the nurse practitioners, as we all know, as even private practitioners know, that nurse practitioners are taking over a lot of the slots because the pay is a little bit less, but their skill level is still the same. So if you can be, and once you've seen the doctor, gotten treated, your next visit or visits may be with a nurse practitioner, even in private practice now.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's not an unusual game to play. What we're the concern here is that getting in to see the doctor the first time and then getting your follow-up visits, that's the issue at VA. Many veterans aren't able to get in the first time. And we've had these waiting lists that have been put together to phony up for the higher ups in government at the expense of patients. That's where the ball game is. And why is that?
And
we still haven't gotten down to the nitty gritty.
Lots of
that.
Calls meanwhile on this issue, mm-hmm. but we do need to move on and discuss the other biggest stories of the week. The number to join the show, 549-2937. And also making headlines this week, a major Supreme Court decision Wednesday will change the way police can look through your smartphone. This is a major privacy ruling. Now, the High Court ruled that police must have a search warrant to go through your cell phone data during an arrest. This is very interesting. It raises a number of privacy concerns. Now, before, police were able to search all the contents in your pockets, including your smartphone. But the court now says with all the information our devices contain, there are major privacy issues here. Remember the case of local artist Chip Southworth, also known as Keith Haring's ghost? Well, he's the guy that anonymously painted images on local utility boxes and was arrested for it. Police were able to nab him in part because they confiscated his phone and went through all his data. They will no longer be able to do that. Give us a call with your thoughts, 549-2937. Larry, this has wide-ranging ramifications.
It does. And it's not a surprising decision when you think about it because of the way technology has changed in the last 10 to 20 years. I mean, in 1980, the idea that you would have all your personal information on you would have been ridiculous. But now we do our banking with our cell phone. We oftentimes have access to our emails via our cell phone. There's really almost nothing we don't do with our cell phone. So to say that it's just something in your pocket is just not acceptable. And the law tends to be about 10, 20 years behind technology. So now we see the law suddenly catching up with where we are.
AG, the argument for privacy is that it's essentially a computer and that police need a warrant to search your computer. They will now have to have a warrant to search your smartphone.
Right. And I think they'll find ways to fast track these warrants to, you know, get this information, especially when they need it. I think there's going to be some caveats regarding, you know, drug cases, weapon cases, kidnapping cases. So, I mean, I feel like this ruling is actually the beginning of a larger dialogue on, you know, privacy issues as they relate to the 21st century and these devices and the devices that are going to follow.
Now, this also ties into Florida's new ban on texting while driving. If you get pulled over for that, they can't just nab you. They've still got to go get a warrant before they can check your phone to see if you were texting behind the wheel. John.
Wow. That puts a hole in that law, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
I doubt they're going to go through the trouble of doing that for what is essentially a misdemeanor. I think AG raises a good point that it's not going to stop the police from doing this. They're just going to have to go that extra step of getting a warrant. And you know, there are systems set up to get warrants pretty quickly. So
yeah. It's not hard to get a warrant. I mean, any police officer will tell you that you just have to show minimal evidence and the judge is happy to sign it. So it's another step. And cops obviously won't search a cell phone if they have no good reason to do it anymore. But if they genuinely suspect someone of wrongdoing, it's not going to be hard for them to search a cell phone.
Right. Americans really kind of want it both ways on this, Fred. They want their privacy, but at the same time, they want police to be able to do what they need to do.
Well, that's why the caveats that AJ was talking about are in the judge's ruling. And, you know, it is going to be easy to get a warrant. And the other part of it, if you get arrested and you're taken down and booked, they're going to take all your goodies anyway and put them away. You won't know if they got into your cell phone or not unless somebody says they got into your cell phone. They got to then present. I assume they got to then come back to you while you're in custody and present the warrant and say, hey, we're going to go into your cell phone that you don't know where it is anyway. So it's a strange bit of business, you know, with the cops and the cell phone. But, yeah, I mean, on the texting thing and on the street, I mean, they're going to have to get one and they won't be able to get your phone. But look at it this way. The other part of it is if you don't abide by what the officer says, you could get into a resisting without violence issue. I mean, there's a lot of ways in which they could mess you up on the street.
Oh, yes.
The number to call in is 549-2937. Now, the High Court makes a lot of rulings in June. Typically every year. They also ruled this week that they struck down the buffer zone between people going into abortion clinics and the people that tend to be outside protesting at those same clinics. This should carry with it interesting ramifications as well.
You know, we've heard a lot of studies that say that for people coming in for abortions or some sort of service, they find dealing with those protesters to be really difficult. Now they can get right in their faces.
There's no zone anymore.
There's no zone anymore. Yeah.
So we could see a local impact to that. We'll have to wait and see.
This seems like a recipe for disaster. You know, it seems like you've got people making these decisions to have abortions. You've got the professional protesters out there, and it seems like sooner or later there will be violence, there will be confrontations, there will be things that probably could have been avoided.
North Florida has a history of this, too, of serious protests at abortion clinics. There was a doctor in Fernandina Beach shot to death about 15 years ago. So, you know, this could very well impact locally.
Lots of news to discuss. The number to join us, 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts right now on gambling in Florida. A new survey that was just done by the anti-gambling group No Casinos finds that most of the state's voters are very reluctant to expand casino gambling in the state. 73% of state residents say they support a proposed constitutional amendment that would give voters the final say in whether to legalize expanded gambling in their communities. Of course, here in our area, we've got pari-mutuel betting, we've got dog track, we've got offshore ships, but
everything but casino gambling.
Everything but casino gambling. Mm-hmm. In the state, 50% of the state's voters say they don't want to see a politician putting this in their campaign platform, despite the revenue potential.
Yeah, I mean, gambling is just a weird thing when you look at it. You've got, you know, casinos trying to crack down on online gambling. You've got online gambling being everywhere. You've got dog and horse tracks all over the place. And yet we really don't want it in our community except where we go and gamble. It's there's hypocrisy wherever you look on this, but there is a sense that people don't want gambling to be the major industry of the town they live in, the way it is in someplace like Atlantic City.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, I mean, we do have these issues, but I looked at the survey and it honestly is worded in such an amorphous way that I'm not exactly sure what, you know, most Floridians are really going to support on this. I think this could be subject to lobbying. I would also say that if you look at something like dog tracks are on their way out. It's going to be replaced with something. I mean, you see the emergency poker rooms in the last decades, mm-hmm. and I think if you were to take the survey with different wording a few months down the road with advertising on one side or the other,
people might respond differently.
It's happened before.
Bill in Jacksonville is on the line. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Well, I was wondering, if you wanted to create a civilization, would you start with gambling? I mean, it probably would be one of the last things you'd want to do. You need a lot of things prior to that. And I don't think you're helping people and making it easier for them to lose something that they need, and particularly people who feel or don't have a good bead on mathematical expectation. In the long run, you lose. Everyone knows that casinos are built on losers, not winners.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Thank you for the call.
I mean, he's right. We've never heard of a casino going bankrupt because they lost too much money to their customers.
But... unless George Clooney and Brad Pitt kind of walk in. And
exactly.
Carolyn in Jacksonville. Hi, Carolyn. Go ahead.
Hi. I just had a question about the cell phone searches. I haven't seen the actual documentation. Does it say they can search your cell phone when you're arrested? Because I know they can stop and... you know, stop you like for a traffic citation. That's not really an arrest. They can stop you and hold you informally, and that's not an arrest for other things. So
right.
Does it say only when you're under arrest?
Even when you're arrested, they can no longer confiscate your phone without a search warrant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have to get a search warrant.
Yep.
Does that answer your question, Carolyn?
But they don't have to arrest you, though, if they can get a search warrant without arresting you.
Yeah, they could get the warrant without arresting you.
That was my question.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. And we're getting tweets about that, too. Can't they get around the need for a warrant by just asking the arrestee to hand the phone over? That's often how cars are searched, without a warrant.
They can do that now when they search. They can knock on your door and ask, can we search your home? And if you say yes, they can do it. But you have to give consent beforehand.
Sure, you must give consent. Now, a few news and notes from the Jacksonville Business Journal. Jacksonville University is on the move, acquiring riverfront land adjacent to its Arlington campus. John Burr, JU President Tim Kost, making aggressive moves to expand the campus's physical reach and impact in the community.
Yeah, they've got some plans there that are really going to help the business community. They want to set up an entrepreneurial business think tank almost on their campus. You know, Kost has been there about a year and a half, and they've put $20 million into the campus already. They've just bought this land to the south. What was admittedly kind of a sleepy campus, I think, is really going to start making some impact in town.
Making some waves, exactly.
Absolutely.
And the U.S. men's soccer team has finished second in its World Cup group after a 1-0 loss to Germany Thursday. The Americans advance after Portugal beat Ghana 2-1. USA, USA was the chant at watching parties yesterday. A.G. Gankarski, I have no idea what the group of death is. Perhaps you can explain.
Well, it was basically U.S., Germany, Ghana, and the U.S. came out of it. I mean, if you watched that game yesterday, it was uglier than a mud fence, played in a pouring rain, and I have never heard people celebrate an American loss with such vigor, but people are more sophisticated in understanding soccer now.
Yeah.
We've seen in the last 20 years, people just understand the game globally. They understand how it works. They'll be discussing work rates soon. It'll be pretty awesome.
I guess I'm not sophisticated enough. I don't understand how you lose a game and you advance.
I know.
That's just not American. I'm sorry.
But
point differentials.
We had a watching party here in our building yesterday. People were excited.
I know a lot of people that took 2-hour lunches on it.
Yeah.